The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
You remembered them fondly, and then they were gone. And now you want to know who, what, where, when, why. We having fun, yeah. Why It Ended with Robbie E. and Matt Coon.
What up, guys? Hashtag Why It Ended Wednesday. We're here on another week of Why It Ended. Fresh off last week's Chavito, Chavo Guerrero. I'm only saying Chavito because Matt was just saying it, so I apologize for that. That sounded kind of weird, didn't it, Matt?
It did, but I think people close to him call him Chavito. And after
yeah,
great...
but we're not gangster enough to call him Chavito. And now I just said it, and now I feel like I'm a dork.
Yeah, we're not. But it was a great interview, man. What a story. What a history. The family legacy being thrown in WCW. I thought we had a great show last week with Chavo Guerrero.
Yeah, highly recommend you going back and listening if you haven't listened yet. I actually listened to his interview twice. I actually do go back and listen to all the interviews we do, one usually to study how terrible I am and the other one to study how terrible Matt is. So that is...
It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. Yeah. But hey, man...
I was going to say, speaking of studying... You were telling me that you recently found out and you know, the whole like Robbie doesn't know thing, things. I actually tell people, I don't think it's real, but you told me today that you did not know where Alaska was until like 2 years ago.
Yeah, that actually is real. It was give or take, I don't know, 2-3 years ago, give or take. My wife actually told me, but yeah, on the map, like in elementary school and high school and stuff, Hawaii and Alaska are below the United States, like under Texas and stuff. So that's just always where I thought they were. Dude, I didn't put these states places, so I didn't know where they are. That's where I thought they were.
Okay, I didn't get this in our conversation before because I was saying bullshit, Robbie. You are fucking with me now. You do. This is bullshit. But now I understand what you're saying. So you thought like Alaska was floating in the water. It was like an island.
I guess, just wherever it was down there. But, and mind you, this is after I was traveling a lot all over the world, but I didn't pay attention to where stuff was. And Alaska is one of the random four states that I've never wrestled in. So
you've never wrestled in Alaska. Wait, there's four. There's four states. I'm gonna try to guess. Let's see here. Is one a Dakota?
Yeah, which one?
South Dakota.
Yep, damn it, you're good.
Okay, hold on a second.
Are you looking at a map?
No, I'm just thinking. Let's see here. What about Arkansas?
No, I've wrestled there.
Wyoming.
Yep, that's the third. What's the fourth?
Damn, I'm good. Okay, hold on. It's got to be... No. You had to wrestle there. Mississippi.
No, I've wrestled there a bunch.
All right, I've given up. What is the fourth state you haven't wrestled in?
Montana.
Montana, so all in that same area, you don't like the big wide open spaces.
There's wrestling everywhere now, but there's just not much of it. And I guess the Montanians and the Wyomingians don't really like Robbie or something. I don't know.
Well, I'd usually say they're a good company, but apparently they're not because Robbie, I feel like we're close now. We work together. We do this podcast. We finally met. Yeah, true. But I follow The Rock because, you know, The Rock is a big star. And also Brian Giewertz. And I saw actually, it was a tweet from Brian Giewertz who tweeted The Rock's new show. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Is that how you pronounce his name? Giewertz? Isn't it Gerwitz?
No, you have to look at the spelling. It's Giewertz.
Wow.
Yeah, and I only know that because I got to meet Mr. Giewertz and hang out with him and Bruce Pritchard. And Pritchard kept going, all right, Giewertz. So, but in any case, I saw he tweeted out their new show. It looks fantastic. I think it's called Titans, and it's not something I would probably qualify for. It's like it looks like a fitness competition, but what the fuck? I'm 99% sure I saw Robbie E. in the promo video for this show on NBC. Robbie, what gives?
So who's our guest today?
Oh, shit. Okay, it's like that. All right. So
no comment.
If you don't know what I'm talking about, we'll go ahead and tweet it out because I saw it and I had some I guess you call them dirt sheet guys, contact me and say, hey, is Robbie E on this show? And I'm like, I don't know. And then you ghosted my text. I text you and you just let it go.
So you didn't tell us who our guest is today.
Fucking A. Okay, so our guest today, it's someone that's perfect for Wide Ended because it's a guy who is on TV doing big shows at the ascent and height of that early NXT years, Bull Dempsey, known as Bull James. And Robbie, it's someone you go back with a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, actually a lot. I mean, I was around when he first started training. He's always talented and good in the ring. A lot of his friends are my friends. So we've, you know, known each other. So, I mean, we were closer years ago, but then obviously he went on to WWE and stuff. And when I was in TNA, so, you know, whatever. But we, you know, we've known each other, give or take. I mean, God, I'm trying to think here the amount of years. I don't know, maybe like 12 or 13 years or something like that. So it's been a long time.
And I found a little bit of evidence we're going to talk about in the interview about you guys tagging against one of the all-time great tag teams in a match together many years ago.
Yeah, this is true. But yeah, God, I hope you don't have a picture of that.
Oh, God, I wish I did. Hey, but speaking of pictures, we got a lot of added new content on our Patreon site, patreon.com/WyattEnded. And we're going to have very soon a bonus episode with one Savio Vega on there.
Yep, that's going to be up soon. So Patreon members, you know, be on the lookout for that. And in addition, guys, if you are in the Baltimore, Maryland area, our second live show is going to be November 18th, 5 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be at Jimmy's Seafood in Baltimore before the Survivor Series. And not only are you going to be able to meet me and Matt, but we're going to have our live in-house guests, the Queen of Extreme, Francine, and James Ellsworth. They're going to both be with us.
Oh, that's fantastic. We've got our second live show ever. And this one, Baltimore is such a great place to do these shows because you can get New York. You're coming from New York. I'm coming from Virginia. We're both driving. Of course, you can get the Philadelphia area, New Jersey area, New York area. I guess you're from Jersey. And D.C., Maryland. And Jimmy's Seafood has become the it spot for wrestling fans and wrestlers. And you'll get to see us before the Survivor Series, then hang out and watch Survivor Series at Jimmy's and enjoy some of the world's greatest seafood.
Yeah, so tickets are available through Jimmy's Seafood. Make sure you check that out and connect with us for that. And then if you're not able to make it, it'll eventually be a Patreon edition of Wyatt Ended.
And I am looking forward to meeting Francine in real life and James Ellsworth. I met James Ellsworth, actually. But I don't know. I think I might have a little trouble telling them apart. What do you think?
I don't, because you have a lot of pictures of Francine probably all over your house.
So I do have to actually, that was you, motherfucker. You had the pictures of Francine all over your
room. When I was younger.
You know, I do have a great memory of Jimmy's Seafood. The first time I was there, I was working with Conrad and Bruce, and I actually had to teach Nikolai Volkoff how to sing Jeff Jarrett's theme song.
Oh, my God. I'm so glad that I wasn't there for that.
So here's a great story I don't talk about a lot, but as soon as I meet him, right? And mind you, he passes away a few months later. As soon as I meet him, he starts talking to me about losing weight and about a diet plan and all this stuff. Like, he basically just called me fat and gave me advice to lose weight, like, the minute I met him.
Well, is he the only one that's ever done that?
No. God damn it. Well, in any case, we have a great show today coming up. Right after this, we have Bull Dempsey.
I'm Wyatt Ended.
Alaska.
Nice. Hey guys, so by now you know about one of our main sponsors for the show, and I know you might be a little embarrassed to talk about it, but
it's our friends over at stopusingyourhand.com. Now, I don't know about you, Robbie, but my hands are important to me. I play guitar and I play music and I type a lot. And so maybe for those of you who maybe want to take care of your hands or protect your hands or save you the trouble, you can go to stopusingyourhand.com.
And listen, bro, there's no need to be embarrassed. It's all fully private. Any order from Pleasure Products USA comes in plain packaging with nothing indicating the contents, guys.
And you know what? give the hand a rest. You can go to stopusingyourhand.com. And if you go to stopusingyourhand.com/promo, enter in the coupon code FISTBUMP, and you can get a free stroker.
And remember, guys, no worries about getting found out, because your credit card statement will not reflect that an adult product was purchased, so you're in the clear.
Now, StopUsingYourHand.com's premier product is called the 3B Starlet Stroker, and it's got a ton of features that you might not expect, you know, such as, you know, a real voice coming at you, or maybe a little movement in an unusual way. Where can you go? You can go to StopUsingYourHand.com/promo. Use the coupon code FISTBUMP for your free stroker. StopUsingYourHand.com. So guys, as you know, thousands, tens of thousands of wrestling fans listen to Why It Ended every single week, and a lot of them are within that 25 to 44 year old age bracket that advertisers love to reach out to.
So this is your chance to advertise with us, Robbie E. Matt Kuhn, on one of the hottest podcasts in professional wrestling history. And all you got to do is email whyitendedmail@gmail.com and let us know what you're thinking.
If you have a wrestling type event or wrestling related product, or even just a product that you think would appeal to our audience, please give us a holler. Give us an email at wideendedmail@gmail.com, and you can get an ad as awesome as the one we are doing right now.
You know, it just, it matches. It's just, it's something you would do. I'm not surprised at that. It's just, I know that you went there. You probably worked some sort of angle where, like, oh, hey, bro, I'll put you on my Instagram. Give me free Botox.
Well, I did that the week before. I didn't do that when I got there. I had to set it up before I got there.
Of course you did.
Would you ever get Botox, Matt?
I would never get Botox, no.
Why? I mean, it's preventative. It takes wrinkles away. I mean, what? Any and all the movie stars and stuff you watch on TV get it. I just, you know, I'm willing to admit it. That's all.
Why are you worried about wrinkles right now?
Because I'm 35, man. It's all going downhill from here.
What are you trying to get at, Bull? What are you trying to get at?
He's a young guy. Why does he need to worry about wrinkles?
All right. Well, speaking of young, because I started wrestling when I was young. I started wrestling when I was 16, and my first match was on my 17th birthday. But you, because I know, I remember you. Obviously, we knew each other very well when you were super young and started. You were, what, 17 or 18?
Yeah, 17 when I started.
And then when was your first match when you were 17?
Yeah, it was. It was, 'cause I started in February, and then my first match was that October.
And then, I mean, not to take away your story, but obviously I remember so good. So you originally started training at ECPW in Lake Hiawatha for Gino Caruso, right?
Right. Yeah. So and like, it was like, and you remember, like, quickly after that, there was just so many guys coming through that I just kind of, you know, bounced out of there pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, how did you originally, like, find that school?
I think I was just, like, finding stuff online, and then I saw that, like, Guido and Crowbar and those guys came out of there. And so it was kind of like, it was between that and Johnny Rogers' school, but I figured, you know, it was just a little, I don't know, if there was something there. I went down, I checked out both places, and Gino's kind of stuck out to me as, like, all right, I'll give this a shot. If it doesn't work, then I'll just go to Gleason's.
And then when you actually started wrestling, was it what you thought it would be? Or was it harder or easier? Or
I had a pretty easy road there. Like, some of the training stuff was hard, but I picked everything up really, really quick and had the right crew of guys around me that kind of took me under their wing and then kind of got me not out of there, but just they got me around different independent shows.
I have to say, guys, one of my favorite tag teams of all time was back in the day. There's a tag team with, you know, Mike Rotundo and Steve Williams and also Rick Steiner and under Kevin Sullivan. It was called the Varsity Club. But I heard something recently. Was there a Varsity Club with a tag team of Baby Huey and Rob Echoes?
Yeah. So what was that, like, maybe two shows?
I think. But did you do it with someone else on other shows?
No. It was like a Ricky O weekend when he decided to run, like, for 1 weekend a year.
And me and you wrestled, guess who we wrestled, Matt? The Powers of Pain, right?
You were defeated in the Dennis Coraluzzo Invitational 2009. The Powers of Pain defeated.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, because it says defeated the Bart Varsity Club, and I'm like, wow, what a match. And then I saw it had Rob Echoes in it, so I'm not sure.
Are you now making fun of my name to me? You made fun of my Botox. Now, Matt, are you making fun of my name? You're the worst co-host ever.
So what was it like breaking into the business and tagging with a young Robbie E. Bull?
Oh, it was fun. Rob was always easy, man. Like, everybody knew, like, you could wrestle Rob and have a night off.
See that? Yeah. You hear that, Matt?
I do.
I'm not going to step over too much. That's the one he'll get for the podcast.
So, before that, as a kid, we hear this a lot. It's like one of two stories. It's either, you know, someone who always was in athletics and fell into wrestling, or someone who was obsessed with wrestling from a young age. Were you someone who was obsessed with wrestling from a young age?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, I don't know the exact age, but I remember like when my father like had a VHS tape recorder thing when they were like first coming out. And so he would record stuff that he knew that I liked, and then somehow or another wrestling got on one of the tapes, and that was like, I went nuts after that. And that was like the beginning of the end.
Do you remember the first ever wrestlers you saw, or the first match?
I don't. I know the tape is somewhere in my house. I just don't. It's in storage somewhere. I got to find it, but I don't know exactly. I don't remember exactly what it was, but I just remember being completely like enamored by it. I had to like find as much as I could.
So, and then you were doing indies for a while, obviously all over the Northeast and stuff, same area as me. And you, you eventually, like, how long did it take before? Cause you did like extra work for WWE a few times before you were wrestling there full time, right?
Yeah. Well, I did it the one time I did it when maybe I was like 19 or 20. I think you were there when they called everybody last minute in Albany.
Yep. I actually do remember that. Yeah. They called like 20 people, right?
Yeah, and then everybody like went to go do the pull apart, and I missed the cue. So I was standing backstage watching the monitor, and I think it was like Miz goes, "Oh hey, what do they have you doing tonight?" And I said, "Some pull apart with Hunter and Jeff Hardy." He goes, "You mean that one?" And I looked at the monitor, and I saw like
What were you doing? How did you miss it?
He was a catering.
I think I was just like trying to schmooze or like stay out of the way, or just like I was doing everything but like waiting with everybody else.
I mean, that's a good thing, but it ended up being a bad thing.
Well, no, nobody knew. You know, like Miz pops for it, and then I just kind of like stood against the wall the rest of the night pretending I was actual arena security. But I remember everybody standing in a group by Gorilla, and I'm like, that can't be a good idea. Like, they're just in the way. So like, let me walk over this way or down this hallway.
You got really out of the way. Really, really out of the way.
Yeah, too out of the way. And then after that, I decided, because they stopped doing, you know, like, you know, when you and like Robbie, when you and Judas would go and do like Sunday Night Heat or all this other stuff, you know, they stopped doing a lot of those shows. So you guys were just going as extras and becoming like, oh, that's the guy that's always an extra in this area.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I decided like, let me just kind of like do my thing, and then I'm going to like try to get booked when I feel like I'm ready to be there.
So you purposely kind of stopped doing the extra thing.
Yeah. Yeah, I waited until I felt like I was ready to go.
Well, that was a thing. Yeah, I remember, too, for a while, guys would always say, like, Matt, you know, if you go do extra work and you're known for that, then how, you know, are they going to put you on TV, you know, shortly thereafter if you've been a security guard 50 million times, which it has happened for guys, but still, that was the same thing you heard, I heard, too. So, I mean, that's right. still ballsy that you, you know, would say that you didn't want to do extra work to wait for that. But, I mean, smart and ended up working out for you.
Yeah, and you know, it wasn't so much, you know, that I didn't want to do it. It was just like, okay, you know, and I noticed the same guys going every time. And I'm like, all right, if this is what I'm hearing, that people are getting labeled as like, oh, these are the extras that are always here, then the same crew of guys that were always going, I felt were going to be like that next group of guys that got labeled as, you know, the extras from the Northeast.
Good say. So anyway, bro, so then I know after you we're doing that, you at some point became part of Team Taz's dojo, right?
Yeah, Taz opened that up, and it was something really different, and I was always a fan of his, so I thought it'd be a cool learning opportunity to go and train under him for a while.
And that was basically not taking, like, new guys. That was taking guys that were, like, already trained but touching you up to bring you to the next level, right?
Yeah, that's what I thought was cool about it, which, like, you had to have a certain amount of experience. You had to, like, send him a match and some promos and stuff, so, like, he could weed through a bunch of stuff and pick who he wanted to be there.
And was that training, like, insane? Because I heard stories about Taz's training from years ago in ECW, like, when they had the House of Hardcore back then. Was it anything like that?
No, because that was the whole thing. Like, he didn't want to train anybody from scratch anymore. Like, he didn't have the patience to do it or the time. He was still working for TNA at that point. So it would have taken so much out of his personal life to be training guys from scratch. So that's why he wanted to do, you know, like just guys that needed to get brushed up and then be ready to go.
So it was more like a finishing school type situation, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And was there anybody else there when you were there who went on to bigger heights of the wrestling world?
So the first class, Will Ferrara, who's in Ring of Honor right now, he was a part of that. And because I lived fairly close to the school, we had like these sit down meetings with Taz after like the first 6 weeks. That's what you paid for. It was like a 6 week course. And he told me, he's like, you know, I see a lot in you and I want you to keep coming back. I won't charge you. I just want you to come back to every class that you can, like, going forward. So then he was kind of using me as the example for the new guys that would come in. So I thought that was always pretty cool. And he didn't have to do that, you know, obviously.
What does that mean to you as a young wrestler? I mean, you're a young guy now, but as a really young wrestler, getting that kind of, you know, pat on the back and the badge of approval from someone like Taz, and also Taz, I mean, that is a great thing, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was honored because obviously, you know, I was a huge ECW fan. I was a huge fan of his. And then it's validation for where I'm at in that point in my career. And, you know, then it was cool. You know, guys like Dalton Castle came through there later on. And just to be around different guys from all over the country. And there were some guys from like England and stuff too. So just to be able to kind of intermingle like different like training styles from those guys and just kind of figure out like, okay, this is how they were trained. This is how I was trained. Like, what's different about it? And I wouldn't have had that opportunity to learn those different styles or work with those guys if he hadn't invited me back to, you know, all the rest of the classes.
So who did you first talk to about coming into NXT? When did you first hear about it? Who made the contact? How did that come about?
So I was talking to Bill DeMott because actually I think Rob, you were on there too. When Fierro was running, when Tommy Fierro was running ISPW in Freehold and he brought Bill in.
I remember that. Yep.
Yeah. And I was introduced to Bill that night. And then he always kind of like kept an eye on me, but we never really like talked after that. But I said, let me email him and maybe I can get booked as an extra. And I reminded him who I was and all that stuff. And he remembered me and said he was watching me, you know, what I was doing. And then he said to call the office and get booked as an extra and say that, you know, he wanted me booked. And from there, I got booked maybe like the next month or they were in town either a month or two after, I forgot. And that was October of 2012. And I had my my extra match, I guess, before doors are open with Danny Echoes, actually, ironically enough.
I don't even think Matt knows that there are Danny Echoes exist.
No, there's a whole Echoes family in wrestling.
That ref right now on SmackDown, Dan, he's got like really nice eyebrows and black hair. Matt, do you know who that is?
Oh shit, I know who you're talking about.
He played
okay.
My little darker skin. He played.
He's got really. He's super freakishly tan. Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah,
okay.
Really, yeah.
And he's like super. Like he's super manicured and he owns a lot of toys. Is that who you're talking about?
Correct. And he actually just texted me. I see on my phone, Dan, but I'm not opening it. So God
knows I'm gonna get a text right. I'm gonna get a text when this goes, and he's. I guarantee it. Well, what's wrong with my eyebrows? What's wrong with
you? Oh, I know, because he listens.
If you don't know who that is, guys, go ahead and look it up. And one of the best, most underrated, underused wrestlers in wrestling today. So what was the early days of the Performance Center like? I think you were there, you know, from the date you're saying, you were definitely there before that big grand opening of the new center. What was it like? Did they have it together by then?
So just to touch real quick on Robbie's last question. So I did my first bit of extra work. I had that match with Danny. William Regal and Scott Armstrong pulled me aside. They really liked my stuff. I cut a promo in front of Regal and Matt Stryker. And they told me, you know, come back next month. Call the office again. Tell them we said to come back. So then I came back in November. Same thing happened. And then Regal vouched for me and got me a tryout at FCW in Tampa, February of 2013. I got signed off of that. And then I came in for the first class of the Performance Center to lead into your question, which was July of 2013.
Hey guys, we know we have a lot of male listeners, and for those guys, do you remember the days that you were always ready to go?
Well, now you can increase your performance and get that extra confidence in bed. So listen up, it's BlueChew.com, and guys, that is blue like the color blue.
It's a crazy thing, it's a chewable, and it's available from BlueChew.com. And it's got the same FDA-approved active ingredients that you find in Viagra and Cialis. You know they work. And like I said, it's a easy-to-take chewable.
Yeah, you can take it anytime. You can take it a day. You can take it at night, full stomach. And since they're chewable, they work up to twice as fast as a pill, so you can be ready whenever an opportunity arises. Because let me just tell you something. An opportunity could arise at any time.
Well, for almost everybody except me. But let me tell you this. If it did, if in fact it
That's
did,
true.
You know, all I got to do is go online, because Blue Chew is prescribed online. And it ships right to the door in a discreet package. You know, so there's no like in-person doctor visit. You don't have to be embarrassed or have that awkwardness waiting in the pharmacy. And it's a much easier way to kind of be always ready on the go.
And we all know, Matt, that you probably have had that awkward waiting in the pharmacy visit before. But nonetheless, Blue Chews are made in the USA. And since Blue Chew prepares and ships direct, they are cheaper than a pharmacy, which works out really good for your pocket.
You know, and it's... Guys, this is a no-brainer. You know, if you've always kind of considered something, you know, to help you in this way, you know, Blue Chew is the way to go. You go to BlueChew.com and get your first shipment. Guess how much it is, Robbie?
How much is
it? It is free. It is free when you use our special promo code, Robbie. All you got to do is pay a measly $5 shipping for a free shipment of Blue Chew.
And that special promo code Robbie, R-O-B-B-I-E. And notice how they made the code after my name and not Matt's.
Well, they actually want people to buy it. And don't, and don't just take our word for it. I know many people who have used it, and they love the Blue Chew. Again, that's Blue Chew, BlueChew.com. Promo code Robbie to try it free. Blue Chew is the better, cheaper, faster choice. And man, we appreciate them sponsoring the podcast and being supporters of Why It Ended. And make sure to go to BlueChew.com. What's the promo code again?
R-O-B-B-I-E, Robbie.
It's amazing. He has to spell out his own name. Try it today. BlueChew.com, promo code Robbie.
I'm a college graduate.
Wow. So who else was in that class?
Oh my God! Actually, I got a picture somewhere. It was, everybody who was in FCW at the time, Bo Dallas, The Ascension, Neville, Sami Zayn, CJ Parker, Cash Sono.
It was the guy, the one we had on from the Vault Villains, right, with the mustache.
Simon.
Yep, they were there.
Simon. Yep.
Yep.
And
there was, as far as like the guys who just started that class with me, was myself, Simon Gotch, Eli Drake, Sammy Callahan, Buddy Murphy, Wesley Blake. I'm gonna forget so many. Just said I'm forgetting like the timeline, but I have a picture somewhere, like a group picture the day the Performance Center opened, which is pretty cool.
Wow. Well, and I mean, for a lot of us who tuned into the early days of NXT when it was on Hulu with that Coheed and Cambria theme, you know, we will never forget the early days of NXT. And now we look at it and we know they have like promo classes and they have, you know, that the whole program together. Did you feel like then you were part of a system and you were kind of working your way up?
Oh, 100%. I mean, you know, we were just so regimented, and you're training every day. You had promo class once a week with Dusty. I mean, it was very scheduled and regimented. So, but you knew you were working towards all these goals, you know, of getting on NXT TV, for, you know, first like getting on some live events, then getting on TV, then getting a push on TV, and then obviously getting called up and all that kind of stuff. So it's just, you knew you were working towards all these different goals.
Were all you new guys like getting along, or was there a lot of like, hey, I want to be the best here, I want to get called up first?
I think like there was maybe some of that like in the performance center, like as a whole. It wasn't even just us, but it was never, there was really never anything that like everybody hated each other. Like everybody understood, like we have to pretty much live together. Like we're in here every single day,
yeah,
traveling together, we're doing shows together. Like, so everybody got along. It was really like a family atmosphere. Like that first class really was. Everybody got really close. Everybody hung out together. Everybody did everything together. It was a lot of fun, man.
Was there, you know, of course you're in that situation. It is competitive, but there had to be kind of an element of, wow, that dude has got his crap together. Like that guy is going places. Who was that guy? When you look at that first class, someone hits the ring and you go, oh shit, I need to work on my stuff. Who is that guy to you?
The cool thing about NXT at the time was everybody was bringing it every night in every match. So it was like, everybody had that about them. You knew why most of the guys and girls were there, because you could just see it every night when they got in the ring. And it's just one of those things, like everybody thought like, oh yeah, it's competitive. Like, yeah, we were competitive, but it was like a healthy competition. Cause like if somebody got something good, everybody was happy for them.
Yeah.
Sitting there going like, yeah, I want it to be me, but that doesn't mean I'm going to hate on this guy. Cause it's him. Like I was proud of people when they got called up. I was proud of people when they got pushed as their titles and all that stuff. And the same, you know, that came back for me once I started getting my push was, you know, everybody was happy for me too. So it's just one of those things that gets paid forward.
Did you always get along with all the coaches and everything?
Yeah, I got along with everybody. I was just living my dream, so I didn't, you know, or at least one step closer to it with getting called up and obviously doing that kind of stuff. But yeah, no, I mean, I got along with all the coaches but I also knew my wrestling history, so I knew what I could learn from each person.
Did you think NXT would get as big as it did as far as like touring and the shows before the big pay-per-views and all that kind of stuff? Because from the beginning, it didn't have any of that, right?
No, we were just doing like Florida live events. And my first live event was in Palatka, Florida, in front of... No, it wasn't Florida. Oh, man. But it was against Danny Burch. And there was maybe like 35 people there. And a lot of our Florida shows were just the same. Like we'd run Tampa every Thursday, and that was, you know, anywhere from 20 to 80 people. And then out of nowhere, the network hit, and we did the first special, and everything was going nuts. But we still didn't realize it because we were just training every day in the performance center. So like, we didn't really grasp how big it was getting yet.
Yeah.
Until San Jose WrestleMania weekend. And even then, they're like, hey, you guys sold out this however many thousand seat building, like, in minutes. Like, that's awesome. And we're like, oh, that's cool. And, hey, we have to go, like, back to doing our drills now. So then we got there and saw the size of the building. We're like, holy crap, maybe there's something going on here.
Let's talk about that for a second, because for me, as someone who's taking my son to the last five WrestleManias, a wrestling fan for 30 years, God damn it, it's more than 30 years. I'm old as crap. But I was at that show, and it was at 10 p.m. at night. It was the coolest environment. How great to you, what memories do you have of that San Jose show? Because that was probably the best wrestling show I've ever been to.
So I remember us just like all being, everybody was buzzing because it was just like, when we finally saw the inside of the building, we're like, wait a minute, we sold this out? We're like, holy crap. And then everybody's just like on edge, but like in a good way. And then I remember Jason Jordan and I behind the curtain, and we're following with a second mask. We're right after Tyler Breeze and Hideo Itami, and Hideo hit the go to sleep for the first time in the States since he got to WWE. And we just looked at each other and went, oh no.
And the place exploded, right? The place.
It was one of the loudest reactions I've ever heard. And we just looked at each other and went, oh my God, we're so screwed.
But it turned out to be...
Now we got to go follow that? Awesome.
It turned out to be a good match between you and Jason Jordan, though.
Yeah, no, it was cool. That was I'm almost, that has to be like top three or five matches for me, because I was proud of it, because I was just barely starting to get pushed. So people still weren't connected with me at all. And he, you know, Jordan wasn't really getting used that much. So everybody just crapped on him when he came out, on top of following that match. And then by the end of the match, we had them, and we got a good reaction for our finish. So, to know we went in against all those odds and still came out with the desired reaction, like we were both so proud of that.
Oh, and then that's the awesome thing about the NXT crowd, because for the most part, don't they normally pretty much stay up for everything, especially on those big shows?
Oh yeah, then because it was like after that show, then it was like, hey, we're going to do some more of these kind of shows, and then it became, hey, we're going to tour. And every town we went to was just electric. Like every night, it was the most fun I've ever had. It was insane.
Yeah, Robbie, this was before the takeovers. This was the show that sold NXT to Vince McMahon, where he knew that they could actually do this. It was a pretty amazing night, and Bull Dempsey was definitely a huge part of that. When we talk about, you know, Bull Dempsey, you know, of course, we'll get to the Bull Fit thing in a second, but before the Bull Fit thing, you're talking to Dusty, you're talking to the coaches, you're getting your character together. Who was Bull Dempsey?
It was the same, you know, ass kicker that I was on the independents. They, you know, there was a lot of stuff. They were like, we don't want to really change anything. We want to tighten up some stuff, fix some footwork and things like that. And then with Dusty, it was just working on my promos, and he liked my promos to begin with, so it was very easy for him to work with me. Plus, he always just took a liking to me, and we got along great. And we would always, you know, I'd go meet with him all the time and just really just, you know, BS with each other. And half the time didn't even talk about wrestling. We just joked around.
Do you have a good Dusty story?
Yeah, I came up with this idea like before, this was before I debuted, and I was just throwing stuff at the wall, seeing what would stick. And I wanted to be like Kenny. I wanted to do like a Kenny Powers type of gimmick. So I start selling them on Kenny Powers. I'm showing them like the different videos of what I want to do. And he comes up with this idea of, I'm going to call Danny McBride and tell him he's talking to Dusty Rhodes. And I'm going to tell him that because it's Dusty Rhodes on the phone, he has to come to promo class to cut a promo with you. And I'm like, okay, like, I know he's just joking around, so I'm not too serious. But then he starts thinking about it, and he's like, starts getting all riled up, and like, it was really just to make me laugh. And he kicks open the door to the office, and like a bunch of the coaches are sitting around, and they all just like jump out of their seats. And he screams at Byron Saxton to get Danny McBride on the phone, and then just walks past him into his office. It was like the most random thing ever. But since I knew the context, I popped huge. And everybody else is looking around like, what is that crazy man up to today? Like, what is going on right now?
So how did doing that turn into doing Bull Fit? How did that happen? Was it because it's ran its course, or what was that? Was Bull Fit an idea you pitched?
No, it was Hunter's idea. Because, you know, I had, you know, always, you know, good soldier, did what was asked of me. And Baron Corbin was getting pushed as an ass kicker, and then Kevin Owens was on his way in, and we all knew it. So you couldn't have three similar characters on the show, so something had to give. So because Corbin had just started getting pushed, and I had already been pushed, I was, you know, kind of like, all right, well, he's established, we can do something else with him. And, you know, Hunter came up with this idea and to do like the bullshit thing, and I was all on board, because, you know, the thing that people didn't know, to go back to the Varsity Club conversation, people didn't know that I'd wrestle as a baby or as this guy. Like, I did so many different gimmicks on the indies just to try shit. Excuse my language. I don't know if you can curse or not.
But, oh, yeah, you're good.
All right. I wasn't sure. But I was just trying stuff just to, like, see what worked. And so people had no idea that at one point I had wrestled in a freaking diaper. So I think maybe when they were talking to me about doing kind of like a comedy thing, they were a little hesitant because they didn't know if I would go for it or not. And I was like, yeah, let's do that.
Hey, just Google me and see me in a diaper, and that's your answer, right?
Right. Like, Plus Santino, I think, had just retired, and so like in my head, I'm like, okay, they want me to do a comedy character, and a comedy spot just opened up on the road.
Yeah, awesome.
So, like, this could be like the perfect timing. So I was like, yep, let's do it, please. It'd be awesome. And you know, I always appreciated Hunter for that too, because he could have just as simply said, like, well, take him off TV and let him figure something else out. And he didn't. It was, well, hey, let's find something for him. And I always appreciated that line of thinking, because it kept me alive on TV and not just, you know, back to the drawing board. So that was always really cool.
How invested was Hunter day-to-day in the NXT at that time?
I mean, there's cameras in the Performance Center that go directly to his office. So when he's not there, he's still there.
Wow.
He's 100% on board, and I've said it since the day I got released, and even before that, he's the best boss I ever had. If there was any, hey, boss, I need a minute, can I talk to you? He'd give you five. You know, his whole line was, hey, I got a million things to do today, so what's a million and one?
Wow, that's
Matt, if you had cameras going on in your house 24/7, what would people see?
People would see a very sad and lonely man, Robbie.
Okay. I think there needs to be cameras in Robbie's house.
No.
That's a reality show.
You know what? I do need them. But based on my twins, my dog.
I would love to watch you raise twin boys on a daily basis.
Cameras now would be really funny. Cameras about like 10 years ago, I would just be in jail forever. You don't know the old me, Matt. So
yeah, the cameras today would just show him eating sugar-free ice cream and watching reruns of The Bachelor.
Hey, you're spot on.
You remember when you wanted to go to the club and I didn't have shoes to get into the club, so I had to try to squeeze into your ridiculous Italian leather shoes?
Now that you bring it up, it does ring a bell.
So the bullfit thing was interesting to me as a fan. It was more confusing, I think, than anything else. The vignette started, and then you came out. You kind of had something going on with Baron Corbin where, you know, it was a comedy thing, I guess, but at the same time, you were kind of being, you know, postured as kind of an equal to him, as kind of another badass who wasn't going to be...
No, the bullshit stuff came after Corbin.
Oh, it did? Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, it started in a match you had with Tyler Breeze, which was post the Corbin feud.
So how long did they go with that bullfit thing on air?
I'm not sure about the time frame, but I was doing it up until the day I got released, and I still had matches waiting to air when I got released. So
probably
at the last, maybe the last 7 months or so of me being there.
And were you getting good feedback from it? Did you feel like it was working, or did you feel like it wasn't working and they're losing faith?
They made a t-shirt for it, and people bought it. And, you know, everywhere we went, when we did the UK tour, really, was when it was clicking already in the States. But when we went to the UK, and I feel like because they have such an appreciation for comedy and comedy wrestling, it worked. It clicked over there, and it was some of the most fun matches I've had in my life. I was with Ty Dillinger for six straight nights, and he's awesome. So it just, we played off each other so well, and it made everything just fun. It was the most fun I've had.
So things were working, and the crowd was reacting to your character. It was good. I remember watching it. It was good. It made sense for you. What was the reason that you don't think it worked out?
I don't know, to be honest with you. I think honestly, it was just a budget thing.
Was it 100% out of nowhere when you found out?
I thought so. It was the last thing I expected. But if you look at the guys that got released and my salaries and you add them all up, it adds up to what Shinsuke Nakamura signed for. So that's what led me to believe that it was just a budget thing.
And how many of you guys did get released?
There was five, including me.
And what
myself, Magno from Mexico, a guy named Pete Howard, who was a rugby player from England, and the two Frenchmen who went to TNA after that.
Got it. And what is it? It's a phone call?
No, we had to go into the Performance Center and wait in the lobby and then have a face-to-face meeting.
And was it all of you at once?
No, it was one at a time.
Wow. So even when they called you in for the meeting, it was totally like you weren't thinking that was what it was going to be about?
No, I was just in the lobby, like, alone. So I felt like I was, like, I'm the first one. So what happened was the last time I had a meeting like that, I had gotten a raise. they released people from 9 to 10. And then from 10 to 11, they called people in and tell them they were getting raises. So my meeting was at 10. So while I'm driving to the performance center, I get a text from the Frenchies saying, hey, guys, you know, it's been fun, blah, 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 we got released. Whatever. I said, oh, shit. I'm here. So they're doing 9 to 10 releases again. My meeting's at 10. I'm good. It wasn't good, for the record.
And the person you met with, was that the HR person down there in NXT?
No, it was Canyon Seaman, the head of talent relations.
And were you given, I mean, for us at home, like me and my son texted me that day and said, you know, Bull Dempsey has been released, because that's what we text about. And for us, it was a surprise. For you, it was a surprise. What were you told that day as far as why and what your future would hold if the door was still open and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah, no, I mean, Canyon and I always had a great relationship, and people who don't know any better give him a bad rap because he's not a wrestling person. He came from volleyball. And but he was always so cool to me. He's a great guy. He's always, you know, since then I've seen him, you know, at some indie shows where he's been scouting guys and stuff, and he's never changed. He's never changed towards me. He's always been super helpful, and just great to deal with. And he was very like, look, man, this isn't the end, just keep going. Just travel the world for a little bit, have some fun, and then give us a call, and the door's always open for you to come back. So it was And not that it was like a good thing, but it was a good sign at least. Like, we were both bummed out about it. Like, it wasn't just like, hey, we have to release you, and then I'm stuck. Like, oh, this sucks. But he had a hard time doing it too. You know, we were, like I said, we always had a good relationship, so it was hard on both of us.
And then since then, well, what was the first move that you thought to yourself that you wanted to make? Because you were living in Orlando, and you moved back home immediately.
Yeah, pretty much within like 3 or 4 weeks, I was back up to New York.
And I mean, you helped train at NYWC. You've done Ring of Honor stuff. You were regularly in House of Hardcore. What other stuff are you doing?
I go overseas for ICW a lot in Scotland. They are they're the best. They're so much fun. And obviously the goal is, you know, something like Japan or back to Ring of Honor on a full-time thing, or, you know, wherever it makes sense for me to go financially and creatively. It was just one of those things where, and you know, Robbie, like, the work is up here. Like, we were fortunate enough to be from this area where it's like a hotbed for indie wrestling. So you can go and pick up, you know, how many shows on a weekend. And especially like back when we were breaking in, where, you know, you had NWS and Dapper and Gino running 2-3 times a week. So there's always stuff going on up here.
And where do you see, I mean, I was surprised at how young you were. You have an entire future in wrestling ahead of you. Where do you see ultimately Bull James being in professional wrestling, let's say 10 years from now?
I mean, I would say hopefully back at WWE and making money and back with my friends and doing some fun stuff. But like Robbie said, you know, I'm training people at NYWC now on Long Island. We just sent a student to the New Japan LA Dojo. He signed a year-long contract there. Another student of mine, Willow Nightingale, she's starting to break out and do like Shimmer and Shine and all like the big women's companies and stuff. So we got a lot of good stuff going on there, on top of, you know, the fact that I'm still out there every weekend doing my thing. And I don't know if I still would be, honestly, if it wasn't for Tommy Dreamer, because he was the second person to call me after I got released. And he said, you're on every House of Hardcore show. Don't worry about it. I got you covered. Let's have some fun.
Well, you've definitely had a lot of fun. We've definitely had a lot of fun watching you. And, you know, I think, you know, for, like I said, for me and my son, we've watched you for a long time. We know the sky's the limit, and we really appreciate you being here and telling your story on Why It Ended with Robbie E. But if someone wants to get a hold of you, reach out social media wise, or maybe contact you for some bookings, how does one get a hold of Bull James?
You can email me at bookbulldempsey@gmail.com or on all forms of social media at RealBullJames. And that's I do the Twitters and the Instagrams. And you won't have to deal with following me and me plugging constant amount of stuff that people send me for free every single day, like certain people we know.
Well, that is a terrible, terrible thing. You're missing out, man.
my cheat thrills every day are when Robbie posts something of something he got for free and Zack Ryder comments free.
Well, I keep a lot of them only on my IG story now, so if you stay away from that, you're pretty clear of things. If you go on that, you'll probably vomit. But
it's pretty funny that Robbie can't eat a meal without like posting the name of the restaurant, the address, and all their social media contacts.
Funny how that works, man. Right?
Hey, I'm just, you know, I just, if it's good food, I like to tell people about it. I'm just a good human, man.
Yep, good human with some good Brotox.
Brotox.
Hey, well, thanks for doing this, bro. We appreciate it.
No, thanks, bro. I appreciate you.
So, Robbie, that was the story of someone you've known a very long time, your old tag team partner, Bull Dempsey, now known as Bull James.
Hey, whenever we start our exits, why do you always start with a laugh? Is that a real laugh or a fake laugh?
It is.
It's like you're always laughing at something, but something's not always funny.
Don't like if it was a tragic tale, I would probably go, well, there we go. that's a pretty good call. Usually you say something really, really funny, Robbie, before I start.
That's ridiculous before we hit the record button, eh?
Yeah, it's just your hilarity is what keeps me going. But I'll tell you what, with that Bull Dempsey, I know, you know, you accuse me of marking out a lot, and I totally marked out about talking about that NXT San Jose show. It's something not a lot of people know about because it wasn't on television, but it's literally one of the most important shows of the last 10 or 15 years. And I was so excited to talk about that with someone who was there.
Yeah, no, it's a cool story how, you know, how he landed a spot in NXT and how he was there for the beginnings and everything. But even now, it's good to see that he seems happy. He's training guys at NYWC. I mean, he's regularly working for House of Hardcore. He's done Ring of Honor stuff. And, you know, I know he's been to Australia and England, and he's still regularly wrestling all over the place. So it's good to see that he's keeping busy and, you know, that he's in a good, positive place.
Well, here's the thing, too, is about – there's something we don't think about, and it's something we've talked about with a couple of our guests in the past, is this dude is – 30 years old, Robbie. 30.
I remember when I was 30. It was 5 years ago.
Yeah, that was before you got the Brotox.
I began Brotox way before I was 30, my friend.
But 30 years old means his career is just starting. And how many, especially now when you have, you know, AJ Styles in his 40s and is the champion, you know, Robbie E apparently is on some kind of you know, ad for some kind of NBC show, and he's like 31, you know, so anything can happen.
Well, yeah, anything can happen in wrestling in 2018, and so that's the cool thing about it. So, yeah, he's definitely got a bright future ahead of him, and I think this week's episode was one to remember, Matt.
Absolutely. You know, I would think of this week's episode as kind of like a rock. You know what I'm saying?
You know, your jokes just suck, dude. They really do. They really do. Let's just close it out. I'm in a bad mood.
Okay. So, Robbie, I'm sure you're meeting Honey Boo Boo somewhere this weekend. Where are you wrestling this weekend, Robbie?
This weekend you can catch me in Seminole, Florida, which is Tampa area, I believe, for FTPW this Saturday, October 20th. I'll be there along with, you know, my old bouncer, Rob Terry's there, Samuel Shaw is there. There's a bunch of good guys on the card. And I will also be not answering your texts or your phone calls until we record this next week because you're annoying me.
I'm very sorry. Hey, can I ask you a question?
No.
Have you ever met The Rock? You ever met The Rock before?
So you can follow us on Twitter at Wyatt Ended, Instagram at Wyatt Ended. My Instagram's Real Robbie E. My Twitter's Robbie E. Impact. Our YouTube channel is whereitended.com. Pro Wrestling Tees, get the shirts. Support the Patreon page. And then also remember, guys, November 18th, Sunday, if you're in the Baltimore area, or even if you're not, fly in, drive in, take a train, take a bus, take a helicopter, walk, run, jog, whatever you got to do. Don't miss our second ever live show featuring myself and Matt meeting for the second time, which is probably going to be awkward again, and then our two wonderful guests, Francine, James Ellsworth, and you get to eat some great food at Jimmy Seafood.
Sounds great. Make sure to check it out at Jimmy Seafood website. Our second live show, please support us on the Patreon. It's the only way that we can keep this show going. And we appreciate you helping us bring this show to you for free every single week on...
Lennon.
God damn it. The Rock.